WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. Now 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg begins now.
Welcome you to the morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I have Gwida Brown to thank for today's morning show topic. Gwida Brown, as many of you know, is a very active member in the community and, of course, also married to our own Dave McGrath, our news director. Gwida Brown reached out to me because she had seen a really excellent presentation made by Chad Buchanan from the Kenosha Police Department. And it was related to the what seems to be an increasing problem of cybercrime, scams and frauds that are perpetrated on an unsuspecting public through various means related especially to the internet and by other technological means. And it is something that is really sometimes heartbreaking in terms of the way in which vulnerable people are preyed upon in really brutal ways. And the Kenosha Police Department is not only hard at work in terms of investigating this kind of wrongdoing, but also trying to educate the public in terms of how they can make themselves safer. Not that any of us are completely impregnable to such attacks or to such fraud, but there are things that we can do and ways in which we can move about the world in smarter ways to maybe make it less likely that we will fall victim to this kind of fraud or to these sorts of scams. So I'm so happy to say that Chad Buchanan, a detective with the Kenosha Police Department, is here, along with a fellow detective, Ryan Pfeiffer. They are both within the Financial Crimes Unit of the Kenosha Police Department. And also with us today is John Wenberg, who is Crime Prevention Officer for the Kenosha Police Department. And so he is someone who engages the public on a very regular basis on all sorts of different types of crimes and safety issues and so on, and this just being one of them. So we have the three of them in our studios to talk about this increasing concern and ways, again, in which we can all keep ourselves a bit safer. So Chad Buchanan, Ryan Pfeiffer, John Wenberg, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Glad that you can be here. I really do appreciate it and appreciate you making time in your busy schedules. So, Chad, tell us a little more about this encounter that Gwida Brown had with you, because that was really the catalyst for this invitation for you and your colleagues to come on the morning show.
Yeah, it was kind of in two parts. Gwida and I were doing a point in time count for homeless people in our community a few weeks ago, and that led to we doing a presentation for the Women's Club and on our fraud prevention scam awareness, and that I think it made an impression on her, and I explained to her that we would love to find a way to help advertise the presentations we do so we can talk to more people in the community, and brought us to you here today. We have found that getting out there and trying to educate people and make them aware of the scams is going to be a lot easier and much more doable than them being victimized and us trying to backtrack and find who scammed them and where the money went, because to be perfectly honest, that's almost an impossible task because the majority of these scams are perpetrated through the internet.
Right.
And you have no names, no faces.
Right. And presumably somebody far, far away and certainly beyond the easy reach of the Kenosha Police Department, for instance.
Right, yeah. I mean, as much as our Chief Patton's very supportive of us, but he's not going to send us to a foreign country to go knock on someone's door and question them about a crime. So the best thing to do is try to stop it before it happens here at home.
Absolutely. So rather than flying to Sri Lanka or wherever these perpetrators might be, and again, you know, who knows where they might be, that's part of what is so especially pernicious about this kind of crime. Ahead of us talking about the topic, because this is the, I presume, the first visit that any of you are making to the morning show, I would love to hear just a little bit about each of you and what drew you to want to be part of law enforcement, and specifically the professional pathway that ultimately brought you to the Kenosha Police Department. Let's begin with John Wenberg, who again is the crime prevention officer for the Kenosha Police Department. Tell us a little bit about your own background in terms of what drew you to want to do this kind of work.
I guess I'm born and raised in Kenosha, so this was my community, and this it was something that I really wanted to be part of protecting and serving, and that's why I got into law enforcement in the first place. I did about 10, I've got a little over 28 years on the department. 10 years in all three shifts of patrol. I was a school resource officer for 14 years at Tremper High School. And I think that being the school resource officer is kind of, it was almost like your own community, and you're kind of providing service for that small community. And the crime prevention office that we have with the police department is a broader perspective of that. And when an opening occurred in our crime prevention office, I put in for it because I thought it would be the right direction to go with my career.
And so when did you ascend then into this, or move into this particular position?
Just about 5 years ago.
Very good. Next to you is Ryan Pfeiffer, who, like Chad Buchanan, is a detective with the Kenosha Police Department within the Financial Crimes Unit. What is your story of what drew you to want to be part of the Kenosha Police Department and police work in general?
Well, I knew I wanted to be in law enforcement after I got out of college, just because I thought it, you know, it'd be exciting and do something new every day. You know, a little adrenaline rush, right? That has kind of subsided over the years. I'm going on, you know, over 17 years with the PD.
You appreciate the dull days now, I suppose, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, I started in patrol, went to the gang unit. I was on the SWAT team for quite a few years. And the financial crimes unit was something that I really had no knowledge of. So I figured I'd give it a shot. I've been working with Chad now since probably March of last year, I would say. Huge learning curve. You know, the investigations are pretty in depth. There's a lot of rabbit holes to go down that aren't you know, a lot of times aren't fruitful. But you still try to do what you can do with the resources that we have.
Right.
And it's interesting, you know, it's victims of these crimes are, you know, it's a big deal. You know, these people are losing you know, tens of thousands of dollars sometimes, and it's just, it's heartbreaking. And the reality of it is there's only so much that you can do, that we can do as far as the resources and what's out there. You know, it's constantly changing. You know, the scammers get wise to something, and then, you know, they evolve, and then we have to try to evolve with them. You know, it's a challenge for
right.
sure.
And one of the best things you can do on behalf of the public is to try to reduce the amount of this kind of crime by making people
aware.
Better able to protect themselves. Are you from Kenosha originally, or are you from someplace else?
I am from Racine, born and raised in Racine. So I applied all over the country, actually, when I was trying to get a police job, and I ended up getting the town right south of where I grew up, which has worked out great. So
very
it's a
good.
Great department.
Fantastic. Last but not least, Chad Buchanan, tell us about your professional pathway into law enforcement and the Kenosha Police Department specifically.
So my professional pathway is different in that I really had no inkling that I was going to be in law enforcement at all until I had graduated from college. I thought I was going to be an attorney. I went to college pre-law, and that's a pathway I thought I wanted to take. And while I was in college, I worked part-time for Century Insurance in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And I soon found that sitting behind a desk was not for me. and I wanted to do something where I was out in the community, but I loved the law, but I also loved helping people. And I think at the heart of it, pretty much everybody in law enforcement just wants to help people. And I graduated from college, had to do some time with the Army, got out from that, and we started looking for a job. Long story short, my old college roommate was here in Kenosha. I moved down here, applied to the Kenosha Police Department, and got hired. First place I applied to, and they hired me. 27 years later, I'm retiring at the end of the year, as is John, I believe. But in those 27 years, 18 have been as a detective, so roughly 9 as a patrol officer. I've done sensitive crimes, I've done general assignments, I've done fraud, and fraud and sensitive crimes are the most rewarding, I would say, cases that I investigate, because the people who, the victims in those typically that we deal with are just so vulnerable. So trying to get, you know, so to speak, the bad guy is just much more rewarding, and we're motivated to get every bad guy, but in these cases where you have vulnerable people, and a lot of times in fraud it's the senior community, it's just very rewarding when we can help those people.
Right, absolutely, because boy, people can get badly hurt. By the way, because there are two of you who bear this title, I wonder if you could just clarify what we mean when we say that somebody is a detective with the Kenosha Police Department. I mean, I think we're all acquainted with, in general, what or who a detective is, but I suspect when it comes to, for instance, within a police department, a detective has really specific responsibilities. What would those be? What signifies the work of a detective versus other kinds of police officers?
Well, initially, a detective is just another word for an investigator.
Ah, okay.
So when we receive a case, it is something that a patrol officer has taken an initial complaint on. So they may come to your home because you have a report you want to file with us, a complaint you want to make. The patrol officer does the initial investigation on that. But when they turn in their report at the end of the night, so to speak, they're done. And then that gets reviewed by a supervisor who then directs it to the detective bureau, and then that supervisor directs it to a particular detective. So if it's something, say, a battery, a burglary, a robbery, that would go to a general assignment detective. But anything involving fraud, finances, that goes to either Ryan or I. We are your financial crimes unit here in Kenosha.
Okay, so you are the follow-up guys when something has happened and follow-up is required. I'm guessing that there is more crime than there are detectives and detective hours. What determines what cases you as detectives will pursue?
You mean as far as like with just within our unit or like?
Well, I guess, yeah, I'm curious in general, I guess, but I suppose you can probably speak to your own unit especially. What determines, does someone above you determine what cases come to you and what you're going to spend your time on?
Yeah, when the patrol officer turns in their report, it goes to supervision. Usually in our operations area, that runs kind of patrol, I guess, so to speak. And then that would get forwarded to our detective bureau if it appears that some follow-up needs to be done or we need to find more facts, get down to the details of it. You know, maybe possibly identify other people that are involved. Yeah, and then they determine, you know, if that needs to be done, then that's when we get them. So, you know, for a city of 100,000 people, right, we have, you know, we have detectives in our drug unit, we have detectives in sensitive crimes, we have detectives in general assignment, kind of like Chad said, you know, the thefts, the robberies, burglaries, batteries, stuff like that, and then we get the you know, the cyber crimes.
Right.
And frauds.
And do you get more cases of cybercrime than it's possible to investigate?
We are always busy, for sure. We always have a stack of cases that we have to work on, and you know, some don't go away for a long time, just because new things come up. And you know, we're the fact finders, so we got to try to get as much as we possibly can in order to put it together if you know if there are charges for somebody, we have a suspect, and then we send it over to the district attorney for them to review, and you know, determine if they can bring charges upon somebody, and then it could go to trial or it could be settled, and you know, stuff like that.
So right, right. I guess this is as good a time as any to, well, first of all, to reintroduce everybody. We have three members of the Kenosha Police Department with us on the morning show today. John Wenberg is Crime Prevention Officer, and we have two detectives with us. Just now you were hearing from Ryan Pfeiffer, and Chad Buchanan is with us as well. And both Chad Buchanan and Ryan Pfeiffer are with the Financial Crimes Unit of the Kenosha Police Department. And it occurs to me that when it comes to financial crimes, that could mean a whole lot of things, including, I suppose, literally robbing a bank, although I'm guessing you aren't dealing with bank robberies so much as other kinds of financial crimes. Give us some sense of what falls under that umbrella of financial crimes.
Well, financial crime, it's really quite a gamut. I mean, it can go from somebody having their credit card stolen, used without their authorization, to identity theft. It can be embezzlements. It can be just a large number of things. It can be something, a scam in which somebody is sending under some sort of ruse to send money to somebody else. I mean, it's just a large number of things. And we're actually learning new things all the time. It's like, oh wow, I haven't heard of this before. But more often than not, it involves some sort of fraud or some way someone is being tricked into sending money off to somebody.
Gotcha.
And we do get the occasional identity theft where someone's information is being used, but more often than that, it's usually a scam of some sort.
Right. One of the reasons I wanted to ask that question is because of something that you said earlier in the interview, which is that when it comes to many of these, I don't know if we call them cyber crimes, but where the perpetrator is who knows where, and you essentially alluded to the fact that it's all but impossible to track down exactly who is responsible for that kind of wrongdoing, and that thus, of course, it's next to impossible to arrest them or charge them or whatever. If we don't even know who has done this wrongdoing, but some financial crimes are not like that. I mean, some of them you can investigate and you can really find the wrongdoer, and that is also part of what you do, even if that's not primarily what we're talking about today. But I just wanted to gain some clarity about that.
Sure. I mean, so for example, embezzlement cases, that is typically something where we can track down who actually took the money, because it's going to be somebody within the organization. So I don't want to give the misconception that the financial crimes unit doesn't ever catch anybody.
Right.
It's just that a large number of the crimes we investigate are people who are possibly overseas. They might be in another part of our country. It's really, really hard to tell with the internet and the way fake phone numbers and text numbers can be used, things like that. So
emails.
Emails, right.
Right. So when you are working as detectives on crimes like that, what would you say your main function is in terms of investigating? If presumably it's not to catch whoever did this, because that's, as you just said, all but impossible, and yet to some degree you are still investigating these instances, what kinds of information are you wanting to gather when you're investigating these kind of cases?
You're talking about the ones that are it could be anybody,
right? Yeah. So what is the investigative component of that? What part of that crime do you end up investigating, or what kind of information is valuable for you?
It's always, you know, a lot of it is also a learning experience too. So we have to send several subpoenas out. Often we're constantly writing subpoenas, and that's to different, peer-to-peer payment apps, right? Like Zelle, Venmo, PayPal, stuff like that. In order to get records to try to dig in and see, all right, who, a victim may have been sent an email address or like a Venmo address with some obscure, name to it where somebody, appears somebody made it up, right? So we want to try to find you know, who that belongs to or what bank account that money ultimately went into, right? So we have to send subpoenas out legally to obtain that information. They don't just give it to us.
Sure.
You know, we're ultimately trying to identify a suspect, but you see some of these, you know, as these cases come in, you can kind of tell as you have more experience doing this. Like I explained earlier, we go down a lot, there's a lot of rabbit holes that you can go down to try to find these people, and you may never find them. You know?
Sure.
So, yeah, so we do what we can, you know, and sometimes it doesn't lead us where we need to go.
Yeah.
And one more point I'd like to make, too, is I don't want it to make it out to sound like we never catch anybody. We do catch people. But another reason why it's important for people to report these things to us is, one, so that we can know what's going on out there. But secondly, we can offer a lot of guidance to people on, you may have lost some money, but what we can help you do is learn to not continue losing money and ways to kind of repair the damage.
Right.
For example, one of the things we just try to really emphasize to people at our presentations is freezing your credit. Because that is something where if you freeze your credit, that means someone can have all of your vital information, your name, your date of birth, social security number, your address, your phone number, all of that stuff. They can have that. And if your credit is frozen, it is useless to them.
Mm.
So this is why we encourage people to contact us, because we may not find that bad guy, but we can help you try to limit the damage. And there's situations, for example, I had a case last week in which a woman had some her personal checks. She didn't lose them, but somehow someone got the check information and made duplicates.
Wow.
And they were writing checks around the country. And she didn't know what to do. I gave her some guidance on how she can file a dispute with her bank and get that money refunded to her, because she lost this money at no fault of her own. There was some sort of source of compromise, but it wasn't her, and she shouldn't be the one who's out that money.
Right.
So that we do that as well.
And I suppose the more you understand the nature of some of these crimes, then you're in a better position to really help people.
Well, then we get our examples from that to tell people. And most people in the crowd are like, oh, yeah, that happened to me.
Right. And, of course, because it's, in a sense, a moving, evolving target, it's even more important that you have your finger on the pulse of this. By the way, I just want to make sure I take a moment to say this. My full-time job is teaching at Carthage. And every so often, we will get an email from, typically from Carol Sabar, who is kind of at the head of the library and of many of the technology sectors of the college. And we will get an email from her saying, beware of such and such an email, I mean, such and such a scam, and they're pretending that they're writing from the Carthage whatever, but they're not. And don't answer this, don't click on the links, and so on and so forth. And in some cases, they're very believable emails. And were it not for Carol Sabar very quickly alerting us, the Carthage community, to this, I mean, you know, who knows how many of us students, even faculty, might fall prey. And of course, the typical citizen of Kenosha doesn't have a Carol Sabar who's immediately sending out emails to them to be on the lookout. And that's, in a sense, the purpose of what your presentations are.
Exactly. And just to kind of go off of what you just said, we try to explain to people, because they always feel foolish and embarrassed. And we only get a small percentage of the actual fraud out there reported to us because people are embarrassed. But I try to explain to people that we have doctors, lawyers, some of the smartest people in our community getting taken. And these people, these scammers, are very convincing. If you could make tens of thousands of dollars an hour, as you were saying with the email, they can talk to you over the phone, and they can be very, very convincing. And because they get really good at it, because they make a lot of money doing it.
Sure. I am reminded of a memorable morning show interview I recorded quite a few years ago now, but was a retired Carthage faculty person. Tom Van Damme is his name, and his wife Lois. And they were taken by somebody who called them on the phone pretending to be their grandson, who was at that time, I think, hitchhiking or backpacking or something through Europe. And this person called pretending to be him, pretending that he had been in an accident, which is why his voice sounded a little funny. and they love their grandson, and they acted on their concern and compassion, and I don't remember how much money we're talking about, but they sent it off, and it became evident very clearly that their grandson had not actually called them, that this was someone else. And they actually reached out to me, asking for the chance to go on the air to talk about this. And it really speaks to what you were just saying, that, I mean, on one level, they felt acute embarrassment. I mean, this was two really intelligent, college-educated people, one of them a college professor, and yet they were taken in. And they thought it would be of value to the public for them to know that this happened to us, too. And they were willing to, in a sense, subjugate their own embarrassment and tell this story on the air, which I thought, I deeply appreciated that then and to this very day. And that's an important part of this whole story, too, that people talk about this, even when it's painful.
You know, a common theme for pretty much every scam is a sense of urgency, where they don't want to give you time to think. And that's a classic, where you have the grandchild that's been involved in an accident. You don't have time to call mom or dad, but I need the money now, or else I'm going to go to jail, or I'm not going to, you know, whatever, urgency. So if your listeners ever find themselves being pressured to do something immediately and not take time to think, odds are it's a scam.
Right. We're speaking about cybercrime and being prey to scams and fraud. We're talking about this with three members of the Kenosha Police Department, Chad Buchanan and Ron Pfeiffer, detectives. And we're turning now to John Wenberg, who is crime prevention officer. And of course, John Wenberg, what we've been talking about up until now is that one of the best things people can do is stop this before it happens. I mean, before an actual crime gets committed. And I suppose that folds very much into your own whole purpose as a crime prevention officer.
Exactly. That's kind of where this really took off last year. I do a variety of safety topics, including what was our scams and fraud. But again, I don't have the expertise that Ryan and Chad do in investigating and in, you know, tracking these guys down. So I would give the general precautions and things you could do to make yourself more safe. But what I was finding out is I also do our neighborhood watch meetings and stuff. And in these meetings, we would talk about various safety topics and ultimately scams and identity theft and that sort of that topic came up. And every now and then I'd get someone, again, as we were talking, there's that sense of embarrassment about it. Someone would raise their hand and say, yeah, that happened to me, and you know, they took me for this amount of money. And my first question is, did you report it to us? No, I didn't. Why not? And a lot of times they feel like there's nothing could be done, but they also are embarrassed by the fact that it happened. So I was dealing with a ton of these. I ended up talking to Chad one time about just scams and identity theft and fraud in general, and hearing how many cases these guys are getting on their desk, and just the general concern from the public, our community. We realized, like, we got to get ahead of this thing, and let's get out and try to make as many people we can, as you know, aware of that this is going on, and they're not alone, and they're not foolish or dumb or naive for falling for it. It happens every single day here.
Right. Well, and as you're saying that, I'm realizing that I tend to jump to the conclusion now in 2025 of how could somebody not know by now that this happens, that this kind of crime happens on a daily basis. I mean, how could somebody in this day and age still fall for this? And the thing is, if it's something that to this very day people are so reluctant to talk about, then you could very easily go through your life and actually not understand the pervasiveness of this. And probably the more open we can have people be, you know, you mentioned this, you know, with your friends at church or your friends
Absolutely.
At the golf course or whatever. I mean, the more people are talking about this, the more awareness there will be that everybody has to be careful about this.
Absolutely.
So is it your sense that this is worse than it once was in terms of just the sheer amount of this that we're seeing?
By far. Technology, as great as it is, it's making committing these crimes so easy for the bad guy. They have so many options, so many resources. The term, if it comes up, is phishing, and it's with a PH, not an F. And it's in the form of text, emails, phone calls. Like, all they can send out thousands of these in minutes, and all they need to get is a couple people to bite, and you know, and they're making their money. They're pulling off their scam.
Right. In the presentation outline that one of you, I think it was Chad, maybe you emailed this to me, and it's kind of interesting to see the different ways in which this kind of thing is perpetrated. And one of them, I think you call the grandparent family emergency scam. And what I was relaying to you from my friends Tom and Lois Van Damme would be a perfect example of that. Another that I hadn't—it hadn't even dawned on me. I mean, I know that this exists, but I hadn't thought of this being kind of under this umbrella. Are romance scams. Explain to our listeners, especially for someone who's never experienced this firsthand, typically how this kind of thing plays out and the kind of damage that can be done.
I guess this can happen to, I mean, a large range of ages, I guess, with people. You know, typically it's some senior community that fall victim to some of this, you know, with loneliness, or you know, they just lost a loved one that they've been with almost their entire life, and they're looking for companionship. And with a lot of these dating apps and stuff that are out there, you know, you never really know who you're talking to. People could say the right things and be, you know, they, you know, some people, you know, can sell ice to Eskimos, and they're very good at it, and they tell you what you want to hear, and you know, you fall for it. So I mean, in a typical one, I think Chad's had one of the most recent ones, you know, they found these people online. They were talking online, and he, you know, typically these people that are either in the military or they're on some oil rig, you know, out in the middle of the ocean somewhere where they can't get, you know, your likelihood of meeting them in person is, you know, is pretty slim to none, you know. So, and then they end up convincing, you know, this person that's looking for companionship to maybe invest with them. You know, we can double our money, you know, in minutes if we invest in this scheme or whatever, you know, however they paint the picture.
They probably wouldn't call it a scheme.
They would not, but it is
a scheme. Yeah.
And you know, and then, you know, kind of in a nutshell, you know, they end up sending their money to these people, and they never want to meet in person. You know, they may say, yeah, I'll meet you at Mitchell Airport on this date and this date, and you know, my flight gets in here. They'll never show up. You know, they'll never FaceTime. You know, I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with FaceTiming.
Mm-hmm.
They won't do that because they're not who they say they are.
Right.
You know, they just want your money. So.
Yeah.
And that's part of the romance thing with, you know, people say that they're in a relationship, you know, often, and they've never met this person in person, right? They don't really know what they look like other than a picture that's sent via, you know, online, which you don't know who that person really is, you know, so.
Wow. And I should think that's especially embarrassing. I mean, I would think that's even worse than the grandparent thing, although people shouldn't be embarrassed. I mean, when you have people out there that are so slick and so masterful when it comes to preying on your most vulnerable sorts of feelings, but I could see how someone would be very, very pained to admit this to anybody, that they'd fallen for something like
right.
that. Wow.
Yeah, it just, what Ryan said just made me think. I'm investigating a case right now. I'm not going to give too many details about it. But that's something that just stood out to me about this particular case, is the fact that the person they were in a relationship with, I do that on my radio air quotes, the person wanted them to send the money via cryptocurrency.
Ah.
And another thing that we try to really emphasize to our audiences during our presentations is, if you ever find yourself sending money via a cryptocurrency ATM, I will say with 100% certainty you are being scammed.
Wow.
There is no legitimate reason why anybody in your audience, if they're dealing in cryptocurrency, they know they're not going to do it through a cryptocurrency ATM. So if you find yourself feeding money into a cryptocurrency ATM, like my victim did in this case, you're being scammed. And that should just be a huge red flag.
Wow. Yet another type of scam that we should talk about for a moment involves lottery scams. And I think this is something where somebody maybe pretends they've won a lottery or something, are they pretending they're part of a lottery?
So I think kind of more like a sweepstakes scam. It's almost presented like the Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes, where they get a phone call and they're told that you've won $30 million, but you need to pay the taxes up front.
Right.
And this is the example I use during the presentations. It's like every example I give, it's from a real case that we've investigated. So we had somebody here in our community who got a call believing they had won Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes. They don't remember necessarily entering it, but when you're being told you've won $30 million, you just see those dollar signs.
and the defenses go down.
And the catch is you need to pay the taxes up front. So then you are sending off $30,000 to somebody, nameless, faceless person somewhere else, and you don't see them. And it's your realization comes too late that you have not won $30 million. And your money's gone.
Oh, what a shame. Especially when you think about, you think you've gotten this thrilling news and it turns out to be nothing but a cyber attack, so to speak, and such a shame. There are also scams involving tech support, where somebody, I think this is something, another case of impersonation, but something a little bit different in terms of somebody pretending to be someone to whom you would be giving information. Does anyone want to shed some light on that?
Sure. So tech support scams are probably the most prevalent as far as, an example I can give would be, people on their laptop and they get an alert that, they have some sort of virus on their computer. And, in order to get that off, call this number, right? So they call the number. I'm equating it to a case that I had recently where it kind of encompasses a lot of this stuff. They called the number on there because they figured, well, I have a virus on my computer, and now it's locked out, whatever. They call, they end up speaking. In another one of these points on these scams is that they want to keep you on the phone. They don't ever want you to hang up, ever, which would give you time to think and ask some questions in your head, like, this doesn't seem right. So they never want you to do that. So these people ended up talking to like bank managers or people that identified themselves as bank managers, ATF agents, I think like maybe an insurance company or something. They were on the phone for over 3.5 hours. And then the ruse ended up turning into, well, you have these properties in another state, which these people don't own any property in any other state. And the house was raided by the feds. There were several pounds of drugs located, illegal firearms, stuff like that. Now there's a warrant out for your arrest. So in order for you to get out from under that, you have to pay this money, basically. So they were sent around to all these different people identifying as federal agents and all that, and they ended up having a courier come to their to certain places that these scammers would set up and actually meet in person after they've withdrawn cash from their bank account, almost to the tune of $130,000.
Wow.
And over 9 or 10 trips, like separate trips, of actually putting the currency in a shoebox, placing it in a vehicle where somebody pulls up, the driver never turns around, it's all covered up, you can't identify them, and they drive off. And like I said, they've done this like 9 or 10 times. And it all started with a pop-up on their computer, which if they would have simply turned the computer off and turned it back on, it would have been fine. Their computer's fine. And it all started there, and then that's where it kind of ended up. They sent them paperwork that looked like legitimate warrants, and it was very, very believable. And these were educated people, and they were on a fixed income because they were retired. And I mean, and that's about around how much money they lost. It was wild.
Wow. And I guess the key to that is people get duped into clicking onto these emails that look very convincing. It might say your Netflix bill is due, or you have not paid your Costco membership, and people will click on these things because they look very convincing, and in reality, you're clicking on something that's putting a little piece of malware or a virus onto your computer, your laptop, your tablet, your phone, whatnot, and it's only going to be something temporary, but it just kind of leads people down that path to financially getting ruined.
Wow.
And what we emphasize to people in the presentations is, if you think you have a virus on your computer, your electronic device, take it somewhere local. Don't call a phone number that you're seeing on your screen. Don't even call the number that you Google. Take it to somebody local, because sometimes those numbers on Google are actually, on their search results, are promoted because by the scammers paying to have their phone number put at the top of the search results.
Wow.
So you could be calling a number thinking you're smarter than the scammer. You're actually calling the scammer. So the phrase shop local really applies to getting your computer serviced and getting a virus taken off of there, if you actually have one.
Right. That friendly guy at the help desk at Best Buy or wherever it might be.
Absolutely.
You can look them in the eye and know exactly who you're dealing with. Right. You know, it's interesting. Somebody said this earlier, that this is often older folks, and of course I would, as at the age of 65, I would count myself there, but folks especially my age and older, who we think of as kind of technological immigrants, I think is the term, where, you know, we weren't born into a world with laptop computers and the internet and so on. It became the new world, the landscape in which we're trying to adjust and become comfortable. But do we also see victims of this kind of crime even when it's technological natives, I think is the term, where, you know, younger folks in their teens and 20s and so on? I mean, is it important for us to remember just how pervasive this is in terms of the potential victims?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it affects younger folks too, because since this generation that has grown up with all this technology and smartphones and stuff, they believe whatever they see on there is true, gospel.
So right. they can be just as naive as the 80-year-old grandmother who is relatively new to all of this.
Correct.
Interesting. John Wenberg, when you are dealing with the public and kind of talking about matters of crime prevention, I'm guessing that people are eager, maybe even desperate to get this kind of information. I mean, how receptive are people to receiving what you have to offer?
So again, I do a variety of safety topics, and I don't know if there's any one that grabs the crowd more than our scam and fraud presentation. It really, even when we're told in the beginning by the host that we have a time restraint on this, we exceed it every time, because they're asking a million questions, and it's all pertinent information that they want to know, and it's beneficial to them. So when we started talking about the scams and fraud, it was unreal how receptive everyone was, how much information they want. They would listen all day long, and they'd take every resource we give them, and we do provide a ton of resources through the Federal Trade Commission, the vast majority, but a ton of resources at our presentation, just helping them to prepare to not be victimized.
Right. Well, and I guess the picture that you're painting here is that sometimes we can really get a little bit overly paranoid that, I mean, every person lurking around the next corner is going to mug me, or that sitting at home just waiting for somebody to break into my house. I mean, those kind of crimes are terribly regrettable, but relatively rare in the lives of most people. But we are really talking here about a threat that is very real and that streams into our lives on a nearly daily basis. I mean, almost all of us are absolutely potential victims of this, and in many cases we don't even understand what these perpetrators are scheming to do. This is nothing that should be minimized. This is something that really needs to be taken seriously.
Absolutely. We, in our presentation, it's maybe some of the stats might be a year or so old, but over 5.5 billion internet users in the world. Five
wow.
and a half billion. So that's how far they can reach out. You know,
wow.
Everywhere. It's and in that, it was like 87% of people that own a cell phone, it's a smartphone. So they have the internet at the tip of their fingers all the time. And that's what Ryan was talking about, the younger generation a little bit. They're glued to their phone. They have that phone with them, and they're on it 24/7. So that just gives them more opportunities to be victimized.
Right, and that level of familiarity, it's almost an extension of their hand, but I can see how that would also perhaps render them not as vigilant as they really need to be.
Yep.
So I know that one of the most important things you want to say is that you would love to have further opportunities to talk about this with various groups around town. I mean, this presentation that you have about scams and frauds is exactly the kind of thing you want to share very widely. So for somebody listening who is intrigued by this, concerned by the topic, and would like to pursue this possibility, what should they do?
Well, we have a couple different options. You can request a police response or a police presence to your event by going on our website. We've also been promoting it through basically Ryan and Chad's office desk numbers, which if there's an opportunity, we can give those out as well.
Sure.
My office as well would be an option, and I can give you our phone number there as well.
I think what we will do is we will put this on our website as part of this on the morning show archive, and have that for people to take down and then pursue this as they see fit. And I think you've done a tremendous service just in this conversation. And of course, we just scratched the surface. We really didn't even get down through every single example of potential scams and frauds that are out there. But I think and hope that we have made everybody listening just a little bit more aware of what they could possibly fall prey to, and some ways in which people need to take extra care as they're navigating through this world in which we're living now. Chad Buchanan, Ryan Pfeiffer, detectives with the Kenosha Police Department, John Wenberg, the crime prevention officer. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedules to have this conversation on the morning show, and look forward to further conversations about this really important topic. But thank you again for being my guest today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, a conversation about flexibility. Sometimes in the day and age in which we live, flexibility, being flexible, is seen as a sign of weakness, when in fact my morning show guest tomorrow, Dr. Ross White, believes the opposite, that being flexible is actually a sign of wisdom and strength. His book is called The Tree That Bends: How a Flexible Mind Can Help You Thrive. This weekend on the podcast version of The Morning Show, we'll be sharing interviews from the archives, including a conversation with Stephen Davis about a very talented woman, Stevie Nicks. And Mr. Davis's book is called Gold Dust Woman, The Biography of Stevie Nicks. Coming up on Monday's broadcast of The Morning Show, an interview from last year, incredibly memorable. I'm happy to rerun it. Simon Schuster's book, The Showman, Inside the Invasion That Shook the World and Made a Leader. The leader in question, Vladimir Zelensky, the leader of Ukraine. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Don't forget that the program is archived at WGTD.org and available as a podcast. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Our weather forecast is for sunny, breezy, mild conditions today with a high of 43 degrees. Cloudy overnight with a low of 28. Cloudy tomorrow with a 50% chance of light snow. We will eventually reach a high of 40 degrees. And then A lovely period with mostly sunny skies. Saturday, sunny, 43. Sunday, sunny, 53. Monday, sunny, 58. Next Tuesday, sunny skies, a high of 63 degrees. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elk.